And welcome you to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I hope you've all survived losing an hour last night. And that really means that spring is basically here. I mean, we're watching ball games and we're counting down until opening day, and we're getting very, very close. I'm your host, Daniel Sproptel, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, Tara Wellman from Birds on the Black and Tara Wellman on Twitter. And you know, we were talking before the show, Tara, about various things we'd like to talk about tonight, but it's still so hard for us to draw a lot of conclusions after, 2 weeks of spring training games that are fairly meaningless. But it's starting to get, I think, to that point where I don't know that they have a lot of weight, but games start to matter just a little bit more as you get, 2.5 weeks from spring training, from opening day.
Yeah, this is sort of where we turn the corner for, as far as I'm concerned, in not necessarily looking at wins and losses, although those always seem to play a role regardless of how significant you make it. But in terms of what we're seeing from these guys who are supposed to be the starting players, who are supposed to make up the 25-man roster, some of those guys who are still fighting for those last couple of spots on that 25-man roster, this is where the page turns a little bit, and you're going to start to see more than two at-bats a game for some of the big names, and you would like to see the results follow in that as well. So it's hard for me at this point to really draw a whole lot of conclusions, even with some of the players that have had spectacular starts to spring training, as well as those who have had a pretty uninspiring starts to their spring training, because you never really know in any given at-bat up until, that last week even of spring training game, if they're working on something specific, as opposed to, the approach they would have in a game in the regular season, where they're in a position to do whatever they have to do to get on base, versus, okay, in this at bat, I'm working on this one specific thing. So it's hard to buy a whole lot into what the numbers are at this point and the story that they tell, because it can be very misleading. And we all know that, but it's still easy to kind of get wrapped up in the hysterics a little bit of so-and-so is doing this and so-and-so is hitting that, and how that plays into how you would make out your daily lineup if the games mattered this week, but they don't.
Right. They don't. And again, this is even more so because of the fact that the Cardinals do have the new hitting coach and a new approach to hitting. This is something, the analytics and stuff that you've got to figure. There are a number of people working on things. You're right. You don't know, and you don't want to assume that the sky is falling on any of these guys just yet. However, there are guys that come into spring training and, at least for public opinion or public perception, need to have a strong outing. They need to do something that, if nothing else, gets people off their backs. And so far, Dexter Fowler hasn't been able to do that. He's one of the ones that's had that target on his back, and I know he would have liked to come out and, hit, two homers and had a 350 average right now, but so far that isn't happening. And again, I kind of thought we would see more of Dexter in the early going just to let him try to get into that groove, but he seems to be on that general, veteran schedule of playing every other day or something like that. We know that target's on him. When do we have to start seeing something that at least gives us some hope that things are going to turn around?
Yeah, this is such a weird situation for me. And look, I've been on the record repeatedly saying that Dexter Fowler, if he's playing well, makes this team better. Mm-hmm. And they have to give him every realistic opportunity to get to that point. The challenge is Tyler O'Neill playing really well makes this team better. Jose Martinez playing really well makes this team better. And those are guys that are at this point behind Dexter Fowler on the depth chart. And you want to see Fowler earn the role that is sort of written in pencil next to his name, as opposed to being given that role because he's the guy that's supposed to have it. Now, I also think this is difficult for me because comparing what Dexter Fowler is at his peak with what Tyler O'Neill is at his peak is comparing apples and oranges. They don't profile as the same player. They don't have the same role on the team. The Dexter Fowler that the Cardinals paid a lot of money to bring to St. Louis was supposed to be a table setter kind of guy. He was supposed to be the high on base guy that you could pair with Matt Carpenter and drive in a lot of runs at the top of the order. So that's a different kind of value, a different flavor of value, if you will, than what Tyler O'Neill would bring to the table as far as a guy who hits for power, maybe not necessarily for average, but is going to drive runs in later on in the lineup because of the power that he has to offer. So it's hard for me in having these conversations this early in the spring about, you know, should it be Tyler O'Neill? Should it be Jose Martinez? Should it be Dexter Fowler? When none of them really are the same player. If you are building a player for a specific role, none of them are going to be in the same spot, but they're all sort of vying for the same playing time. So it's difficult for me to kind of figure out where I'm at as it pertains to who I'd like to see on the field or who I'd like to see in the lineup and how you mix those guys in, along with Ozuna and Bader, of course, who are going to need days off on their own. So I think there are plenty of opportunities to get all of those guys on the field, but who carries the most weight right now, I think, is really tricky to figure out, especially when the process with Dexter Fowler right now is not, I'm going to earn a spot on this roster like it is with Tyler O'Neill. It's, I got to figure out how to get back to being me. And that's a process I don't know how to judge. I don't know how to gauge that. I don't know what sort of timeline they're working off of. I know that he talked this week about not having seen a whole lot of left-handed pitchers yet and not being able to get his timing right as opposed to swinging from the right side. So hitting against right-handers, I should say. So these are all things that come into play there, but you also want to see him making the kind of plays in right field that you would like to see him making and all of those things that haven't really happened yet. So I started this by saying I'm trying not to draw too many conclusions based on numbers that are misleading, and now I'm talking about the fact that his numbers have been less than inspiring, so how do we draw a conclusion from that? I think the real answer is you don't. Some of this stuff is just going to have to play out through the duration of the spring and see where we're at 2.5 weeks from now.
Yeah. And again, it's not, I mean, even if you wanted to take results, even if you took results as meaning something, Harrison Bader's hitting .136 just like Dexter Fowler.
Right.
And Marcell Ozuna has one hit this spring. And you can factor even, you know, Jose Martinez is hitting just a smidgen better, 174. You know, Paul DeJong hitting .182. I mean, there are guys that just aren't putting a whole lot of numbers. And we know this. I mean, if you listen to Kyle and you hear him talk about the you know, players that play at Palm Beach, that the offense is typically a little bit depressed in that side. And that's not just because of the players, it's because of the conditions. So there's some of that. There's some of this trying to figure out what's going on. There's some people working on, I mean, there's lots of different issues, but so it's hard to throw anybody completely under the bus. You know, that said, I think that's one of those things that we're going to be watching so much this year is how much of a leash are they going to give to Dexter Fowler? Because we saw last year that there was quite a bit, and the Cardinals may have missed the playoffs in part because of it. Lots of other reasons too. Let's don't throw it all on Dexter, but there was some of that, you know, of trying to get him better. And it's something that we've seen over the last number of years is, you know, got to get him right. That was that mantra. And there's still that idea that they need to get Dexter right, and they do. You're right. I think he brings something very interesting to this team when he's going. When he is, you know, getting on base and you put him in there and letting the other people drive him in, that can really help this team. I guess what worries me more about his spring so far is that he hasn't drawn a walk. And, you know, again, put all the caveats you want on there, too, because they're all true. But that's still something that you would like to see a guy that is supposed to be getting on base to find some ways of getting on base. So, you know, if we're still talking about him hitting .136 with 3 days left or right before they go to Memphis, you know, maybe that's a little bit more cause for concern. And especially, like you said, Tyler O'Neill, you know, leading the team in home runs and one of the few guys that really is having some sort of an offensive spring. It's hard to see how you leave him out. Now, we talk about it. You know, a lot of people over the last little bit have been worried about how do you send this guy down to Memphis. Derek Gould and others have kind of really indicated the club is not planning on doing that, that they're really going to have him on this roster at some point on the spring, even if he's not a starter. It just feels like they're going to find a way to get him some at-bats in the major leagues, even if it's, you know, a rotation of him and Ozuna and Fowler. I think he's got to be playing, doesn't he?
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I know that complicated has become sort of a dirty word in these parts, but I know it's complicated when you have five guys for three spots, but I'm not entirely convinced it's a bad thing. I think there are concerns about pushing Ozuna too much too quickly. I think that there are concerns about what happens when Harrison Bader hits a wall. I don't mean literally as in the outfield wall. I mean when he hits that sort of sophomore season slump and doesn't snap out of it quickly while Tyler O'Neill is tearing the cover off the ball. What happens if Dexter Fowler, they give him 6 weeks of the regular season to figure out what's going on? There are plenty of opportunities. There are going to be plenty of opportunities, I think, to work in those guys, particularly O'Neill and Martinez, because of what they bring offensively. And there will be time to give some guys. There's not a guy in that outfield that has to be on the field every day. Mm-hmm. So I feel like in that mix of those three that are penciled in as the starters, you don't have Bryce Harper out there. You don't have to put any one of those guys in the lineup every single day. So I don't know how Mike Schilt will manage it. I don't know how creative he'll be willing to get and how much he'll get those guys, particularly the likes of Ozuna and Fowler, to buy in to some sort of mix and match outfield. I know that guys need regular at bat. Like, I get it. I get that that's not the way that it normally works. You have your outfielders, you have your guys, you have your fourth outfielder who you can mix in when you need to. Having five guys for three spots is in fact complicated, but I'm not convinced that it's a bad thing to have the specific five guys that they do to mix in and out as it makes the most sense, much like we've heard Mike Schilt talk about doing that with the bullpen. And I don't know how much he'll do that, but again, I think that it could still be very feasible. It could still be very possible to find successful usage of all five of those guys if, you know, they're all healthy and playing relatively well at the same time.
Well, and that's what we keep putting on Mike Schilt, isn't it? I mean, we keep saying, well, at least we trust that he can maintain this rotation, whether it's bullpen or if it's infield or outfield or whatever it may be, that he's not going to necessarily be locked into one guy or, you know, that. And we have, you know, there's no reason to think that he won't, but we also don't know that he will. You know, Mike Schilt is.
It's easy to say that in the spring. It's harder to look Dexter Fowler and Marcell Ozuna in the face and say, hey, you're not playing today. Yep. That's a different story.
Yeah, especially now that he has a job. I mean, when he was interim manager, I mean, one, you know, he pretty much played Dexter Fowler every day, and there was that commitment made to him through the front office, so there was that, too. But, you know, when you're interim, I mean, you don't necessarily know if you're going to get the job or not. You can kind of be aggressive, but these are the guys you have to deal with. These are the guys that you're going to have all year long, and, you know, how does that work? So I think as much as we all have championed Mike Schilt as this, you know, ideal manager to some degree, we don't know yet. I feel like that's more likely that it was with the prior manager, but we just don't know.
And I think for me, the reason that I feel a little more comfortable saying that is that we have yet to see what Mike Schilt does strategically as far as how it will be different than what Mike Matheny will do. I mean, we obviously saw some changes last year, but I don't think that was a great indicator of who Mike Schilt is going to be over the course of an entire season. It was a great first glimpse, and it was obviously enough that the Cardinals felt comfortable moving forward with him. But we're going to get a real first taste of what Mike Schilt is like when it's his team, it's under his control, it's his makeup of guys, it's, you know, all of that's going to be a little bit of a different story. But so we don't necessarily know how he's going to apply his own kind of strategic plan to this team. But what makes me feel relatively comfortable saying that this mix of outfielders is possible under Mike Schilt's guidance is how much these guys have already talked about the communication with this guy. I was listening to Derek Gould's podcast, Best Podcast in Baseball, the other day, and he was talking about how dramatically different this spring has been, and a lot of it is because of that communication and the work that Mike Schilt has put in to create this specific environment. So I think for me, as far as Mike Schilt is concerned, yes, it's still all very presumptive to say that he is going to directly make this team better and that he's going to get players to do things that Mike Matheny wouldn't be able to get them to do. All of that is wild speculation at this point. But to some degree, it's an educated guess because of what we keep hearing from even the likes of Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina, who have talked about Mike Schilt being the best communicator they have ever played for. And that, I think, is what is key to what he can do with this club.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there are reasons that we believe in Mike Schilt more than anybody else that has maybe held that chair for a while. But again, I feel like there, you know, I think there, I have a feeling that there's going to be some that turn on Mike Schilt kind of quickly, perhaps when Dexter Fowler, you know, plays for 2 weeks in a row or something like that, and true, it's same old, and things of that nature. But you know, we just have to wait and see, because it's a learning process for him too, and it's going to be very interesting to see that process plan out. Cardinals made their first cuts of the spring, which I've been talking with Alan Medlock a little bit about cuts for a while, and it just feels like it's a little late in the spring for the first cuts. I don't know if it is or not, but it just feels that way. But the Cardinals did, you know, they sent some people down to the minor league team, and I guess the one name that might stand out, especially given the hype from early in the spring, was that Ryan Helsley already went down. I was a little surprised that they didn't keep him with the big league club a little bit longer and see what they have, because, you know, this is a kind of a guy like a Jordan Hicks that might have been able to push his way onto the roster.
Yeah, well, Jordan Hicks basically got sent home last year, too. So it's not, nothing's written in stone at this point. No, but as far as Helsley is concerned, yeah, I was a little surprised that he didn't stick with the big club a little longer. I do think that the fact that he spent a significant amount of time injured last year probably has this team fairly comfortable with him penciled in at Memphis for now, and to kind of get him back to where he was. Not that he's far off from that at this point, but then they can have him ready. I certainly expect that if there's a need, he will find his way back up to the major league roster at some point. But this allows him to maybe focus on some more specific work as opposed to trying to make the team, and they can, you know, build him up from there. So that was certainly a surprise. I think the Cabrera, Gallegos are guys that are exciting for the future, but not necessarily playing a role breaking camp with this team. So again, allows them to go do some pretty specific and maybe more structured work to prep them for the roles they're going to be asked to play. So yeah, it does feel a little bit late for cuts, and yet with Helsley, it felt a little bit early, I guess.
Yeah, and, I mean, and it is interesting to see a guy like that going out first time around. But like you said, I mean, if they know that a guy's going to be at Memphis or whatever, then, you know, sometimes there is advantages to get them the innings that they need, especially for pitchers, the innings that they need on a regular basis, rather than trying to, you know, there's other guys on this team, you know, Brett Cecil and others that need their own time to kind of get adjusted, and they're more likely to be on the roster. You got to kind of manage that. So I guess that has something to do with it. What is interesting for me, just personally, because it's the what we're calling the patron prospect of the blog, is that Dylan Carlson isn't part of this cuts, and he's still on the major league team and not a guy that's going to make the team. But I think that must speak to somewhat of what he's done for the team and what he has shown to them so far, because I mean, he's one of those guys that he's going to play double-A ball. He's not going to be, you know, even knocking on the door necessarily this year, you wouldn't think. and he would be a guy you would think, okay, he's somebody you can send out, and you know, we can get more bats for other people. They kept him up there, and I don't know. It's gonna be interesting to see what they say about him.
Yeah, I feel like there's always a guy or two like that that you know isn't really in a position to make the major league team, but is impressive enough that they want to continue to give him that experience, whether it's being around the major league players or getting those looks at you know, other major league pitching, or keeping him around the major league instructors or whatever it is. I feel like there's always a guy or two like that in the spring that sticks around pretty long, even though you know that they're not really playing for a spot on the big league club. And that experience is, I would have to imagine, tremendously valuable to those young guys who can then go back to Springfield knowing kind of what it takes to get to where they want to be. And that is, that creates a level of expectation because they've sort of been on display in Major League spring training, but it also gives them some very real and very sort of attainable goals that they can put into place as they go back and start their season with whichever minor league club it is.
And if you want to go conspiracy theory here, there was an article earlier in the spring about Dylan Carlson and how he and Paul Goldschmidt had already become pretty good friends.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to do the recruiting thing for Paul Goldschmidt, maybe you keep people that he's comfortable with up on the team for a while longer. You know, I don't know. I think it's very, I think it's kind of interesting. You're right. They want to get that experience. And I think it just shows that he's a guy and others that are like that. Randy Rosarena is still in camp and things like that. Lane Thomas, although he's been dealing with some injuries. But he's a guy that they're keeping an eye on, and they want him to know, since they're keeping an eye on him as well. So it should be kind of interesting to see. And, you know, again, we're just at 2.5 weeks. You know, there'll be some more cuts coming soon. I don't know if they'll do it. You know, it used to be every like once a week, and maybe a little bit more than that now that time is getting by. But be interesting to see when that cut finally comes for him and how long he sticks around. Cardinals not only did some cutting, they did some signing as well. They signed some people to the people that had no control, and that's true to say, that they signed them to contracts. And everybody kind of went along with the process except for Jack Flaherty and Jordan Hicks, who just got their contracts renewed, but they were not signed to a deal because they didn't agree to the terms. So the Cardinals, having the fact that they have control over these players via the CBA, can set the salary and force it upon them. Now, Jordan Hicks hasn't said a lot about it. I haven't seen, at least, and I haven't always kept up with this weekend. But Jack Flaherty has been, I think, somewhat, I don't want to say vocal, but he's definitely made it known that he's keeping an eye on labor issues and things of that nature. And as he says, the system is not great, and that's very possible. But what we wanted to talk about was the Cardinals offered him $572,100. And when he didn't take it, they signed him. They renewed his contract at $562,100. So for not agreeing to the contract, he lost $10,000. And that seems, well, it seems a little petty, doesn't it?
Yeah, the whole process seems a little petty. The fact that, you know, they can make an offer, the player can turn it down, then the team can sort of exact a penalty on them for not accepting the offer that was sort of a lowball offer. Anyway, it's all very weird, and it's I'm sure much more layered than I'm aware of. But it's a weird situation, and it's a strange sort of dynamic to create with a guy like Jack Flaherty, and to some extent Jordan Hicks, although I feel like he's in much less of a position to argue that that the team owes him anything after his first year at the major league level, not because he wasn't spectacular, but because it's just still could be an anomaly, I guess. And it could be for Jack Flaherty. I think we feel a little more confident in the total package that he's put together as far as his minor league career leading into his major league career. But with Jack Flaherty, it feels a little strange to kind of do this tit for tat thing this early in the process with a guy that you would like to theoretically be, you know, potentially the anchor of your rotation moving forward, a guy that has stepped up in every way possible and made himself not only an asset because of what he brings to the table physically, but with what he's done as far as, you know, his maturity and his leadership in the clubhouse and being that sort of Chris Carpenter-esque guy, even at a young age, that you'd like to have as a part of your team moving forward. So, you know, I think Jack did everything that he needed to do to say, look, I'm not upset with the Cardinals, but I'm upset with the process. And there's a lot of that going on in baseball right now. A lot of guys feeling like these teams have more money than they probably know what to do with, and they're, you know, exacting a $10,000 penalty because you didn't want to play their game.
Yeah, for sure. And again, I mean, you know, this is, you're right. Like you said, this is a guy you, in theory, are going to want to be this cornerstone. Why needlessly exasperate him? I mean, if he doesn't agree with your deal, fine, just sign him for that deal. You know, $572. You know, it's...
Here's the thing. He doesn't have to agree to that deal. Like, that's the position that the team is in, is you can say, look, we're willing to pay you this. I don't want to be paid that. Okay, well, you're going to make that anyway.
Right. and I mean, that's, you can argue whether that's fair or not and all that. And there's, I'm sure in the new CBA there'll be some issues. But to then say... Okay, well, since we're not going to take that deal, we're going to, you know, penny pinch you, you know, because, you know, $10,000 for the Cardinals, they probably don't spend quite that much on Blogger Day, but it's close, probably, when you talk about the sweet and the food and all that, and, you know.
I don't know, those brownies are probably pretty pricey.
But, you know, I mean, well, they ought to be as good as they are, so, you know, the background check to let Kyle in is got to be, I don't know what that's.
That's why they needed to save the $10,000
exactly,
this year.
Exactly, exactly. So, but, you know, I think that, you know, you look at, yeah, something that they can make in less than an afternoon, and to you know, for what purpose? I mean, to irk your guy. And again, I think it's not the same situation, but it kind of reminds me a little bit of how they've treated Michael Wacha over this pan. And I wrote about that earlier, that they've just never, part of it's puzzles of shoulder and part of it's otherwise, but they've never given him that commitment. And they, you know, took him to arbitration for the first time in 20 years, went to an arbitration hearing over Michael Wacha. You know, Flaherty, Tommy Pham was last year, Flaherty and Hicks this year. This is the first time in, I don't remember how long, I forgot, Derek Gould had a tweet up there, but it's like basically 20 years since anybody had been renewed like this. And now three players have been in two years. And that speaks to not only the players getting a little bit more active and a little bit more informed, but I think it speaks to the teams just determining to save every penny that they can. And it's not a great look, you know, when the Cardinals fan base is spending this offseason, you know, the fact that there's no offers and push for some of the big free agents, you know, to see you then, you know, trying to save $10,000 on a guy that's already making almost the minimum, it just doesn't look good.
Yeah, it all folds back in on itself, I think, as far as where this, what the state of Major League Baseball is right now, and for that matter, Minor League Baseball sort of enveloped in that process as well, because, you know, we keep hearing these conflicting dynamics, right? That baseball made over $10 billion for the first time last year, and then simultaneously, baseball doesn't have enough fans and it's dying. We hear that teams can't afford to pay top-tier players, and then we see multiple 10-year, $300 million-plus contracts given out. I don't care who it's to, right? There's just this very conflicting dynamic of baseball trying to say, we don't have enough money, so we're going to do this. And then, oh, by the way, they actually all have more money than they can actually spend. So where is that money going? How is it being utilized? Why can't it be put back into the assets of their company, which are the players, whether it's, you know, those lower level major league players or the guys in the minor leagues who literally can't swing at an inside pitch because if they break their bat, they don't have another one, and they can't afford to buy one because the team doesn't provide it for them. That's the weird dynamic that we're looking at right now. And so to see a guy like Jack Flaherty, who in every possible way should be a key thread to bridge this team from now to the future, kind of being shortchanged just because that's how the system allows the team to operate is a little bizarre. And quite honestly, you know, we saw Jose Martinez agree to that 2-year deal in what appeared to be a gesture of goodwill. Realistically, he could have been in a similar situation to Jack Flaherty in that the fact that he was willing to consider a multi-year deal is what gave him a little bit of leverage. So Jack Flaherty could have, you know, approached that a bit differently. But again, then you feel like as the player, you're kind of shortchanging yourself by not giving yourself the full opportunity to explore that on a larger level when the team sees you as more than a guy who did all right 1 year and, you know, they can get away with paying you basically the minimum. So it's just a bizarre system. And I think that's, like I said, I felt like Jack handled it well in the way that he was discussing it, which I'm sure was awkward for him to be asked about. But he's that kind of guy who's going to be willing to say, look, this is weird and it's not right. I'm not going to hold a grudge about it, but I'm also not going to be manipulated into something that isn't in my best interest just because in the past players haven't been informed enough to know any better.
Yeah, and I think that's huge. You know, it was kind of reading through this article and he kind of found out about the formula and how they went about it. And I think that's part of it is so many of these players do have a feel for analytics and nowadays and that they never had before. And they know that, you know, just because they didn't win 20 games or didn't hit 340, there's so much other value that they can provide and that can be measured and, you know, they can show this. And they don't want to. You're right. I think, you know, we look at Paul Goldschmidt, you know, with Arizona. He agreed to a deal kind of early, and he may have left as much as somebody said, $100 million on the table, you know, because if he had waited to go to free agency or something like that beforehand, whether he'll decide he wants to make up for that this coming year or not, I guess we'll find out. But, you know, you don't want to say, hey, Flaherty, you should sign a 4-year deal right now or a 6-year deal right now because, yeah, you have no leverage. You're going to get, the team's going to get an asset. I don't know. You know. Like you said, the system is not great. There feels like there needs to be a little bit more, I don't even know what the word is, but the player should have a little bit more agency, I guess is probably the way to say it, and not necessarily be assigned to just this. Or it should just be assigned to it, you know?
Yeah.
Let's just say, okay, for year one, year two, year three, this is what you get paid. You know, if nothing else, at least that's, you know, takes the decision-making process and the ability to be petty away from people. I don't know that that's the best option at all, but it may be better than this, oh, we'll pretend to negotiate, but, you know, if you don't agree with us, then it doesn't matter kind of system. So, I don't know. I think that's something that is going to get a little bit more look over the next few years. Like, you know, we were talking about Blake Snell had the same thing, wins the Cy Young and gets barely an increase in pay because the club doesn't have to. And, you know, if Tampa Bay doesn't have to pay you, they're not going to. So,
right.
You know, but that's what used to be one or two teams. This seems to be now 30 teams. And that's why we're talking about labor issues. So. Anyway. Cardinals, you know, again, another week at it. This week, we continue to count down. Tara, I know you've been extremely busy, and so you haven't had a chance to, but is there anything else from this week or so far out of spring that has kind of caught your eye before we wrap it tonight?
You know, I don't really have a whole lot to say about it because I didn't see it myself, and I don't think there's a whole lot to make of it yet. Once we start seeing Ozuna in games in left field, maybe we can talk about it then. But I did just see that Mike Schilt, who seems to be pretty high on just about everyone that you ask him about at this point, was describing what they'd seen out of Ozuna. Derek Gould was saying that he made some throws, I believe it was today, that he would not have been able to make last year. So he's just sort of ramping up that throwing program kind of letting loose and going all out. And I'm very interested to see what that looks like, and if we can maybe sigh of relief as opposed to of exasperation as far as Ozuna is concerned, once we actually get a look at him in left field and give him the opportunity to let it loose a little bit. I would be great if we could count on him to be able to, you know, throw the ball in from left field every now and then in 2019.
Well, you know, if you just keep track of his Instagram, you'll be able to keep track of these things, because I think he posted earlier in the week posted some throws on Instagram to show how well his arm was going. So, you know, obviously, I got a feel for Derek Gould, because Instagram is taking, I think, a lot of his scoops these days. Between Yachty and Ozuna, they tend to use the Instagram platform quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So so you know, and this is why Tara is on the Instagram beat.
It's true.
You know, we
slacking a little bit as of late. However, I did just breaking news. I did just discover a picture of Harrison Bader and his dog that, as far as I can tell, has never been on Instagram before. You all need to see it.
There you go. This is why you're listening to this show right now. You know, you thought the Ryan Sheriff story last year was big.
No, no, no.
Harrison Bader and a dog.
Harrison Bader and his dog.
I never actually opened Instagram. I need to do that.
You're welcome.
I will have to do that now. I'll do that as soon as we're done with the show. So if there's a dog picture, it's worth it. So
yeah, Tara, I'll send it to you. I'll DM you.
Don't DM me on Instagram, because I'm too old.
No, no,
I don't know how to do
that. Fair.
So I can do Twitter. That's about as much as I've got. So you know. I'm not as young as I used to be. So Tara and I will be, assuming that I'm not dead by then, I guess, since I'm so old now. Tara and I will be with you next week.
I'd just like to clarify, I did not say any of that.
Yeah, I'm not accusing you. Right. I am
just
perfectly...
For those listening.
Yes, yes.
to be clear.
I mean, I'm not going to say Tara wasn't thinking it, but she didn't say it. So anyway, we will be back with you next week, and we'll talk about whatever happens with the Cardinals this week. Hopefully we'll be able to keep up with it, and we'll be hopefully some interesting things to talk about, but we'll go with you then. So for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey Cardinals fans, thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.